Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details. This is Conspiranormal.
Welcome, guys, to Conspiranormal. It's your host, Adam. I am back flying solo. Surfiel is working on his music project still. He will be back next week. But we have with me, as a guest, I guess, you know, he can sitting in as well, Mr. AP Strange. How's it going, man?
Good. Thanks for having me back on.
Yeah, absolutely. This is going to be an interesting kind of show tonight. You hit me up about coming on and talking about this, and this is something that I've been wanting to do for a good long time, and that is conspiracy theories, I guess, slash the paranormal dealing with Elvis, and just kind of like a fun kind of thing. Because when I was like a little kid in my, preteen, early teens, that's when the whole big like Elvis is alive craze was going on. And yeah, you had all these like Elvis impersonators and Dred Zeppelin, of course. If you're familiar, are you familiar with Led Zeppelin reggae cover band that has an Elvis impersonator singer,
like a 300-pound Elvis impersonator singer.
It's amazing. It's absolutely amazing. Back in 1991, there were these TV specials that came on called the one was like, I think, the Elvis Conspiracy or like the Elvis Files. It may have been one. I think the Elvis Files was first and the Elvis Conspiracy was the second one. This is like the most useless knowledge you can possibly know.
But posted by Bill Bixby.
Posted by Bill Bixby, who actually I think was in at least one or two. I know one. He was in Clambake with Elvis. But he might have even been in like two other movies with Elvis. So he hosted it. And this was like the craziest stuff of like basically – looking back on it now, which when I was a kid, young teenager, I had not seen this, but was UFO Cover Up Live that I've talked with Aaron Gullius and just recently, I think with Adam Gorightly, we talked about the UFO Cover Up Live.
Right. That's what made me hit you up because you mentioned the Elvis thing and I was like, oh, you got to do an Elvis episode.
So the Elvis Files, Elvis Conspiracy, those two episodes, those two shows were actually direct ripoffs of UFO Cover Up Live, okay? Because it was the same kind of format. You had the experts talking about Elvis. I think even at one point, I was watching it, a little bit of it, like a couple of weeks ago, and Bill Bixby was talking to some guy with the last name of Geller, and I don't think it was Uri Geller, but it might have been like his brother or something, maybe his brother Bob or something like that. And it was really the same kind of thing. You had this lady, which I think we're going to talk about her tonight, that was really big on the whole Elvis mythology and the Elvis is alive stuff and equating Elvis also with UFOs. She was also on that saying that Elvis was going to come back as like a spiritual leader and all this type of things. These are the things that I remember. I recently watched it again with my dad and just like laughed all the way through this thing.
Yeah. I watched it with my wife recently and we were having a good chuckle over it.
Yeah. It's pretty amazing.
Well, yeah. And I mean, I thought it would be a good thing to talk about too, because it seems like everything old is new again with a lot of a lot of that era. We got a lot of the same kind of UFO stuff popping up, like Adam Gorightly was talking about. And it looks like the Satanic Panic may be coming back. So why not? Elvis is alive. You know, we could talk about Elvis. So
right.
The Geller you mentioned, that's Larry Geller. He was Elvis's hairdresser.
Ah, okay. I guess there's no relation.
I don't think so.
To Uri? Okay.
No, I think Larry, Uri Geller was born in Israel. And I think Larry Geller is born in America. So I don't.
Okay.
Unless their parents, I don't know that they're the same age either. But he actually has a pretty interesting story, because he, along with Jay Sebring, started a hair salon for men in Hollywood. Mm-hmm. So that it was like the first, one of the first, like, specifically men's hair for Hollywood stars and stuff like that. And then when he met Elvis, he and Elvis got along about a lot of occult interests, like numerology and yoga and new agey ideas. So Elvis hired him on as his personal hairdresser, and he just toured with Elvis and did his hair for all the shows and stuff like that. But also the whole time he was teaching him stuff about, you know, the occult, at least like in the 60s and 70s, new agey kind of sense. So he's a pretty central figure to stuff that I was looking at. And when he appears in that special, he's very decidedly on the Elvis is in fact dead, because he was at the funeral. And that was one of the clues that people would point to, is that he was gluing down Elvis's mutton chop in the casket. So like his sideburn, it was supposed to be a wax dummy and the sideburn was coming off, and he glued it back on. And he makes a point in that TV special of saying what he was doing was applying a little bit of mascara to cover up a few like gray hairs in his sideburn. But no, he's an interesting character. It's good to bring him up on that. He introduced Elvis, like I said, to the numerology, particularly a book called Cairo's Book of Numbers. I believe it's pronounced Cairo.
And you just happen to have it sitting there right with you.
I do. Yeah. No, I ordered a copy of it because this apparently was the book that Elvis referred to when he made all his decisions. Geller was the one that introduced him to it, but he got heavily into numerology after that.
Mm-hmm. So. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of the stars of that time period, I think they really got into a lot of that, because the new age was just like burgeoning at that time. I mean, he had like some real like delusions of grandeur. Like one of the Memphis Mafia guys in a documentary that I saw was saying that he had like one point said that I'm going to make the sun come out of the clouds, and he like put his hand up or something. And like, you know, sure enough, like the clouds parted, you know, incidentally. But I mean, if it's a partly cloudy day, that's probably going to happen. But like, you know, he really had some like, you know, he kind of had a lot of issues towards the end of his life, or, you know, what's supposedly the end of his life.
Right? Yeah. And I mean, it might be a product of what fame does to you, for one thing, too. Yeah. When you think about it, he was the first rock star, you know, they called him the king of rock and roll, but the kind of celebrity he enjoyed was unprecedented when he was starting out at a pretty young age. So it's something I've thought about a lot, just being a fan of music and having been a musician myself, is just kind of the moral and philosophical end of what fame actually does to a person. You know, you always have to kind of wonder about that. So, you know, was he emotionally equipped to handle that? Maybe that's why he relied on the Colonel so much, Colonel Parker, to run all of his affairs, or his father. A lot of the Memphis Mafia would say that he had some really weird ideas, especially towards the end. And they bring this stuff up, but even just the isolation of that kind of fame, And that's one thing that I've run into over and over again, reading about Elvis and researching and in preparation for this, is that, yeah, I mean, you do end up pretty lonely, you know, it's a lonely mm-hmm. place to be. Mm-hmm. So,
One point I wanted to, final point about those Elvis shows is that they were very much, in the, same vein as like Unsolved Mysteries, which was huge at the time. And also, I guess, like something like In Search Of, or like, I don't think Sightings had started yet, but it was all the same kind of stuff. And so you had these different, like, the reenactments of the supposed sightings.
Yes.
Like, there's literally like one point where like the big fat Elvis looking dude walks like into the light yep. and shit, you know? So it was,
I think that was Johnny Hara, I think is his
yeah,
name.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Those cracked me up because one of them looks almost like a Bigfoot caught on video.
Yes.
Walking across a field, and you see him turn, and you're just like, "This is like the Patterson-Gimlin film reenactment." But
in fact, in Living Color, which was on the air at that time, they made fun of that. They had Jim Carrey as Bill Bixby, and he like goes to the dumpster. He like goes to like some like, you know, like wooded area, and like finds this hunter that says like, "Well, we found some Elvis droppings just about over there." And, you know, of course they find him like digging through the dumpster, and then like, he charges at him, and they all like go in their car, and you just see Jim Carrey just like with the microphone in his hand. It's like, "We may not make it out alive." And he's just like, Elvis is big fat dude, is just like charging the car, just like constantly bumping into it. It's literally the best in Living Color skit I ever saw. Like, hilarious. It's perfect because it made fun of it so perfectly.
Yeah, all those reenactments were great. There's like one where somebody snaps a picture of him in the restaurant, and it's like just the premise that Elvis faked his death but then appears in public and dresses like himself, you know, has his hair the same way and everything, like looks like an Elvis impersonator when he goes out to dinner. Right. Somebody snaps a picture and then people spirit him away in this reenactment.
Well, it's just this whole mythology has been used a lot too, like Bubba Hotep is like the best example of this,
one of my favorite movies. Yeah,
where the Bruce Campbell is playing, I guess, quote unquote Elvis, you know.
Because well, Elvis traded his life with an Elvis impersonator. Yeah, yeah. And then the impersonator was the one that died, and
it was the same dude. I think it was Don Coscarelli, I think, that did Phantasm. Yes. Did that. Yeah.
And John dies at the end.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So let's talk about all this. Let's talk about, I guess, where we can talk about where it starts, and let's just explore this whole weird just world of Elvis.
It's so nebulous, you know, like it's a big topic because I mean there are some things in pop culture that are just so big and have been around for so long that you're just kind of I mean just the amount of books about Elvis alone that are out there is crazy. But the one I started with was, and I think you referenced her already, Gail Brewer-Giorgio's book, Is Elvis Alive? Mm-hmm. So I don't have that one handy to show you, and it's a podcast anyway, but that was the one that came with a cassette tape. Like a cassette tape was attached to the cover, and it was supposed to be a recording of Elvis after he had died on leaving a message for people. So, and then this ties into to all the Orion stuff as well. It's very much intertwined with that. So I know you wanted to talk about that too, because I think that's some of the early stuff.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Because Gail Brewer-Giorgio had written a book called Orion. She based it on the life of Elvis after he died. So like hearing about his death and then learning about his life a little bit, she claimed to have not been a fan of his, really. Like not a big fan. Not one of the super fans. And she wrote this book based on the idea of a rock star faking his own death after Elvis died. And it was called Orion. And then, then you started having an actual masked singer popping up that was going by the name Orion after she had written the book. So there's almost like it's a really entertaining read. I'm not exactly sure what to make of all of her claims but it set her on the path of trying to figure out, did Elvis fake his death or not, you know?
There's Orion. Nobody can see this, but I'm just saying it.
There's a pretty good documentary about him.
Yeah. Yeah. I've seen that.
Yeah. His real name was Jimmy Ellis. So the documentary is called Orion, the Man Who Would Be King.
There's this weird speculation in the movie, in the documentary, that he may actually have been Elvis's brother. Like, they actually speculate that that might have been possible.
It's like half brother, I guess, right?
Yeah. Right.
Because Elvis did have a brother that was stillborn, and that plays into a lot of these theories that they come up with, that his twin that didn't make it has a lot to do with Elvis and his life, and or the people that think that his brother Jesse Garin, who died at birth, actually lived. And like, you can go off on that crazy tangent where people think that there was Elvis's twin that was just a secret twin that's been alive this whole time, you know, and it was actually him that died or something like that. She had written this story, and then she tried to get it published, and then that's when Orion first started appearing and singing as a masked singer, you know. And then so it seems like the implications that she's driving home are that somebody took her manuscript and decided that would be a good idea to do in real life, as having a masked singer that sounded exactly like Elvis appearing right, like within a year or two of him dying, you know. And then they always kind of played down ideas that it was actually Elvis wearing a mask. But it seemed like they kind of wanted to keep that mystique going. So they didn't want to tell his real name and stuff like that, but people knew, you know, it wasn't Elvis, you know. And like I said, there's that whole documentary you can learn about that guy's life. But in the course of her book, she has the idea that there was more than one Orion. Like, Elvis fans would go to see him in concert, and there's stories where they say Orion is like soaked in sweat while he's out on stage, and he walks off stage to get a glass of water, but comes back out and he's not soaked with sweat anymore. So it's like the idea, I guess, was that Elvis still got to perform with Orion and just pretending to be Orion, you know,
kind of like an Andy Kaufman kind of thing going on there.
Exactly. And Andy Kaufman was well known for his Elvis impersonation too. So.
Right. That's true. Good point.
Yep. So, that's a theme that keeps coming up when I'm looking at this stuff, is the idea of doubles and twins. It's almost like a Twin Peaks kind of aspect to only to an absurd degree, because we're, you know, talking about Elvis. So, I think that's one thing that made it really easy for me to be enthusiastic about this, is how crazy and absurd all of it sounds. And then when you take some of some of the theories about, and the clues that they use, how they get to these ideas, and you pick it apart, there's a lot of weird stuff in there. So one of her main things with it is where she starts with her Elvis is alive theories is the middle name, Elvis's middle name. That's one of the old theories about it. Are you familiar with this?
Yeah, the whole like Aaron and
it was spelled with one A on his birth certificate.
Right, but right.
It was two A's, you know. And I mean, that's been pretty widely debunked at this point. Like, there's pretty good documentation to show that in the 60s he had it formally officially changed. And there might have been like slip ups in the meantime. That became kind of an interesting thing when I started looking at the numerology of it, because having now read the numerology book that he kept with him, I think he may have actually done that on purpose to change the numerology of his name in the mid 60s. The timeline matches up from around where he would have met Larry Geller, so that I found that to be pretty interesting. Yeah. But yeah, no, she goes through all these clues. I would recommend reading the book as long as you take it with a grain of salt. It's the Elvis is Alive theories are pretty pretty out there and pretty wild. And she keeps it a really entertaining read. Am I missing anything here? They had the Weekly World News too.
Oh yeah, that was a big Elvis scene at Burger King and all these type of things that were going on. I remember that like all the time in the supermarket aisle.
Yeah, so that was my main memory of it as a kid was seeing it on the tabloid rack at the grocery store. You know, that was and I've always been a huge fan of the Weekly World News. Oh yeah, here's one I missed. I almost missed it. The Elvis was in Home Alone. Have you heard this theory?
Yes.
So that's a pretty weird one where they claim there are those that claim now, like these days, that he's actually an extra in Home Alone in the background, which he's not. This has also been debunked. It's just like the wacky things like that, you know, he could have possibly survived, but then he wanted to be an extra in the movie. You know, it's wonderful stuff.
Yeah, I think that they I think that they actually tracked the guys that guy down. I think eventually he's actually deceased, but I think that like his son said, yeah.
So yeah, my primary interest, though, the one thing that we definitely got to get to is the Elvis UFO connection.
Oh, we're gonna get there, sir, for sure.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's another going theory, and I guess this was covered a little bit on Banal of America years ago. He had a guy on that was talking about some of these theories. A lot of it has to do with Elvis's love of law enforcement and the idea that he was like a secret DEA asset or working for intelligence in some way, shape, or form. So one of the theories was that he was put into kind of like a witness protection program instead of dying, you know, faking his death so that basically protect his daughter, Lisa Marie. Mm-hmm. That was one of those ideas. So that part of that gets tied into that TV special as well, using the alias John Burroughs. They had that guy in the TV special that tracked the credit charge from this guy John Burroughs all over the country. So so there is that. The I think, you know, you had the famous photo of him shaking hands with Nixon and being awarded an honorary badge for the DEA. So that's kind of where that stops for a lot of people, is that it was more of an honorary thing. He was from law enforcement, and I guess he had a pretty huge gun collection too. He was a big gun guy.
Right.
That's among the many ideas with that.
What do you think? Do you think that it's possible? I think we always got to look at like the string of possibilities, right? I mean, it seems ludicrous, but we kind of have to somewhat entertain the fact that maybe he could have done it and he might have been able to get away with it with all the apparatus that was around him.
Yeah, there was a lot of weird stuff. I mean, like one of the clues that they brought up, there were a lot of weird things about the funeral, I guess. You know, they had his mother's body exhumed and brought to Graceland and buried there. And they had Elvis in a sealed coffin that weighed like a ton or something like that. Mm-hmm. There was a limited amount of people that were allowed to come to it, mm-hmm. to the funeral itself. don't know. I could entertain the idea that he's still alive and or was, at least, you know. It seems pretty fanciful, but then when you really read into it, you start to think, well, maybe it's possible. I also think, though, getting back to that whole fame angle, and getting a little bit weirder with it, it's that when you reach a point of fame where you're so much in the popular imagination for so long and everybody knows you, it's like Elvis as a historical person kind of is off to the side, you know, and now you have like the imaginal Elvis. there's a bigger Elvis, and multiple different versions of him that could exist, like the many impersonators that there are out there. So the way he lives in the popular imagination and the way his music affected people and the fandoms and just kind of like the running joke of Elvis sightings for a lot of people brings this other dimension into it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you could almost have like an Elvis Tulpa effect, is the way one of my friends described it.
Well, now that's pretty interesting that could be a possibility. I mean, it's a bunch of weird stuff that we talk about on this show and other shows talk about. I mean, that the sighting is just like, because when people want something to be true, it could come true.
Right. You know?
I mean, if you look at like, and we look at all this other phenomenon, like up there where you are with the phantom clowns and all that type of stuff that Lauren Coleman has documented. I mean, we know that these type of entities can be sighted. I mean, like, you know, obviously Slender Man comes to mind, a created character that people see, but we know when it was created. So yeah, I mean, that there is that possibility that that's what it is possible, you know.
And I mean, the amount of fans he had was so strong. Speaking of old stuff on TV, like, there, you remember that commercial that used to be on that would always be like the Elvis collection, and it would always say something like 30 million Elvis fans can't be wrong. Mm-hmm. Or something, and that was kind of the tagline. And it's like, well, if so many people believe he's alive, can they all be wrong? You know, maybe in a way they become right, you know. He's not to keep harping on the fame aspect of it, but I think it does kind of like split people's personalities, where there becomes the public version of them and they get a bit lost in the mire with it. So there are indicators that towards the end, towards 1977, he was tired of it. He was tired of the fame. There's clues there with that. And he had already kind of reinvented himself. So yeah, sorry, I'm blanking right here. The fact that there are that there was so much fervor about that too, actually delayed the Elvis stamp. I don't know if you ever heard about this, but remember the stamp collection that came out in 93?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they only require you to have been dead for like 10 years before they can make a stamp, but they delayed it because there was so much pushback. People really wanted to believe he was alive. And there's a book that I wasn't able to read in time for this interview, but there's an actual book about the almost religious following of Elvis called the Elvis People that Eric Wojciechowski recommended to me on Twitter. But that sounds like a good time, but it is, it's almost a religion at that point, you know? So, and I think right. you talked about that with the 13 o'clock guys.
Yeah. I talked to about with that with Tom. You know, he talked about how, cause he grew up in Southern Mississippi. And he talked about how they basically kind of like revered Elvis almost on like the same level as Jesus, even to the point where, as Tom, when he was drunk on my show, he said he even said Elvis instead of Jesus, which was pretty telling. But yeah, I mean, it does have its own kind of like religious connotations. And it's even just like that whole picture. I mean, the very kind of famous picture of Christ with the blonde hair and blue eyes and this type of thing. I mean, like even like down to the eyes, Elvis is the same. So you've got that kind of like deity type of thing going on.
Right. Right. And there are indicators that he kind of fashioned himself that way too. In the book Elvis and Gladys, they talk about how he was a big fan of the Captain Marvel Jr. cartoons when he was a kid. He based a lot of himself on that. So there's the idea that, you know, he had a superhero / secret identity aspect to him, you know. But I guess that's where he adopted like the black hair, the curl, and like the lightning bolt as a symbol for the TCB logo that he came up with.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, it's the manufactured thing where you know, multiple identities or assuming different identities. He seemed to like to do that for fun sometimes. And obviously he'd have a double so that he could leave Graceland without people.
Yep. Yeah. And yeah, yes, he did. Yeah. And that was, I mean, that's kind of what Bubba Hotep plays upon, is that it's actually the double that dies from doing drugs.
Right. Right. And I guess he liked to play pranks on some of the Memphis Mafia guys too, just to like kind of test their loyalty with it. So, but I don't know. There's so many different stories, because toward the end of his life, one of the suspicious things was that he kind of cut out a lot of the Memphis Mafia guys from his will before he died. So the book Elvis, What Happened came out within a year of his death. And that's Sonny West and Red West, like basically slandering him, talking about his drug use and all the other stuff. So yeah, you get wildly different versions of Elvis, depending on who you talk about as a historian or a biographer. And you could probably chalk some of that up to sour grapes at that point with those guys, you know? And then, I don't know. I feel like we could even talk about Colonel Parker a bit, because he's a guy with a strange, shady past.
Yeah. Colonel Parker is weird. Let's talk about that.
Yeah. Even just briefly. I mean,
cause this might really go into why he might have done, if he did fake his death, if he did fake his death, then Colonel Parker may have had something to do with it, and it may have been to get away. Yeah.
Yeah. I could see him doing it just to get out from under Colonel Parker's thumb. And it's just kind of amazing how much the Colonel made off of him. You know, he was getting like a 50% cut of everything at one point, you know, and did a lot of shady stuff with the estate money after Elvis's death. But, you know, one of the accounts in the book that, of Colonel Parker learning of Elvis's death, is he just stood up and said, "This doesn't change a thing. You know, we can still move forward. We can keep doing business." Just seems a little weird and suspicious. And they had all this, Elvis memorabilia and extra records printed pretty much the week before his death and ready to go, as you know. So, I mean, I guess the implication is that they knew the news of his death would come out and everybody would go out and buy an Elvis record or memorabilia. So, Colonel Parker was a shrewd businessman, I guess you could say, as a nice way of putting it, but also kind of a wheeler dealer, carny, and possible criminal, you know. I mean, there's some people that think, we know that he wasn't born in the States and his real name wasn't Tom Parker. He was Dutch by birth, and there are some people that would even say he murdered a woman, and that's why he left the country.
No, I haven't heard that. Yeah,
that's some people have lined up his birth name with a time and place where there was an unsolved murder. I don't know if I buy it, but he had a stint in the army. He never did become a colonel. He never got above the rank of private. But at one point he went AWOL and was captured and put in solitary confinement and ended up in a mental hospital after for a short period of time.
Well, he was an illegal alien.
Yep.
And that was part of the reason why Elvis could not play overseas. Like, he was in high demand in the rest of the world. I mean, he could have been just like the Beatles and gone all over the world. You know, I mean, he was obviously in Europe when he was in the army. Mm-hmm. But I mean, just like, he couldn't do it because Colonel Tom Parker couldn't leave the country. Because he might not be able to come back.
Right, and he wouldn't let Elvis go anywhere where he couldn't monitor right. him personally and see what he was up to.
Yeah. Right, right.
And, I mean, the colonel pretty much worked him to death, too. So, I mean, the theories are that he couldn't get a passport because he didn't have credentials. But also, a lot of people think he was wanted in Europe, you know, so that's why he didn't go there, you know. But yeah, he couldn't leave the country, really. The only dates Elvis ever did outside of the U.S. were in Canada, like on border towns. But yeah, when he was doing his Elvis days, he was working like nonstop, like every night, you know, doing one or two shows a night. So Parker really did kind of work him to death. And I guess there was one point where he tried to fire him and ended up going right back to him. So I mean, there's an argument that could be made of like kind of an abusive relationship there where for whatever reason he was completely domineered by this guy, you know. And like you said, he could have, I mean, other places in the world were offering millions and millions for him to come do a few shows, and
yeah,
they turned it down.
Well, you know, like he couldn't, it was all really like Tom, it was really the colonel's idea for him to do movies.
Yeah,
you know, and not good movies. Yeah, right. I mean, he did all these kind of just stupid movies. And meanwhile, it was like, you know, the Beatles and the Rolling Stones came along, all just like big fans of him. But he was just isolated in L.A., you know, doing these movies.
Right. Yeah. And he wanted to pursue some more serious acting, but the colonel only wanted him in movies where he could sing some dumb song that they could cut a record
right,
of and
right.
money out. You know,
yeah, I don't really understand. I mean, maybe it was just maybe he was so addled on drugs, or maybe it was like he just felt this like such a obligation or a dependency on him. Why he felt just like he had to just keep going on with this guy, you know, with this manager. And
I mean, it seemed like he just maybe was such a convincing con man
that, yeah.
you know, he built that confidence so much and made Elvis believe he couldn't do anything without him, you know?
Right. So that's kind of where I come down, is like, maybe if he did fake his death, big if, like I said, but if he did fake his death, then maybe he possibly was, he did it just to get away from the colonel.
Yeah.
You know?
Or the colonel was the one behind it for whatever reason.
Yeah, possible too. Right, right.
It's weird to say, but I think there's a lot of indication too that Elvis didn't particularly care for all the money and the fame. It did kind of isolate him. But you know, I read another excerpt from something where he was talking about how he took the Bible passage to heart, that it's about a, you know, rich man entering heaven. So he always took that kind of in his mind, where he didn't think he'd be able to go to heaven with all the money. So that's why he would spend it like crazy. He would just give people outrageous gifts and stuff like that. So I don't know, maybe it wasn't that big a deal to him that the colonel was getting half the profit, but it's kind of nuts, you know? So, is a weird character. There's a lot of weird characters involved, and it makes for this weird soup, and you can almost understand why he would end up doing odd things or saying odd things or having weird beliefs. One of the things I came across was he was taking yoga lessons, and what he hoped to achieve through yoga was the ability to like dematerialize and rematerialize at will. So that's, I guess, an example of one of the occult weird ideas that Elvis had that probably made no sense to some of the guys in the Memphis Mafia, but they made sense in Elvis's head. It speaks to my mind of like a certain kind of desperation of wanting to get away from that kind of limelight and scrutiny. Because I don't know, that's a tough enough thing. Just being in the public eye enough that people pick through all of the details of your life and want to know everything, you know, and analyze everything you say and do. I mean, I'm sure you're aware of that to some extent. Being a podcast, you're just you're a public figure. You got a lot of people that listen, you know. Like, I'm not saying you're Elvis, but
my life really isn't that interesting, honestly. But
no, I mean, just public scrutiny. You know, you're just You kind of realize that words have power and things that you say.
Well, you have to be careful. I think certain things that Serfiel and I have talked about recently in the last few months, especially, I believe that like there is some responsibility that the people in the quote unquote alternative media hold.
Right.
And, you know, should be careful about things that they influence people. But yeah, I mean, you're totally right about that.
Yeah. And I mean, it gets back to that whole kind of like fame idea for lack of a better way of explaining it. It's a sphere of influence. So you're talking about how much influence people have over other people, and you might not always realize it. And it's something I've become keenly aware of as I used to perform both like music and poetry and stuff like that. And that kind of built this mystique around myself on a very small, very local level. So I'm not talking about many people, but it still messes with your head, because now people have ideas about you beyond that which you have. And there's this weird sphere coming off that. It always made me wonder, like, would I ever even want to be a famous musician? That sounds like a hassle. So it's something I've always thought about. So when I read about the stuff he went through, I mean, nobody had ever been as popular as he was. In the way he was with the media that was available at the time. And we talked about impersonators, like the first guy that impersonated him was like 1958, I think. So it was pretty much right after he burst onto the scene, you already had guys that were doing the Elvis impersonation bit. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. Fame is a crazy thing. Having a very public life and having people scrutinize that and pick it apart.
No doubt. But he also lived in a time where he could get away with certain things. You know, you could still, I mean, this was a time period where homosexuality wasn't really out in the open. So,
yeah,
you know, like Rock Hudson was able to get away with not telling people he was gay. I mean, you know, Liberace and Paul Lynde, I mean, it should have been pretty obvious, but it was just kind of like even they, you know, people didn't know. And with Elvis, I mean, people didn't know he had a teenage girl, like basically like living in his house, which was Priscilla, you know, which that's a little weird, but, you know.
Yeah.
So now I think that would be, you know, that would blow wide open. Yeah.
I think they learned from Jerry Lee Lewis to keep that quiet.
Because
Jerry Lee married, I think, like his 14-year-old cousin was, I think she was 14 when they got married.
Right. Which honestly, though, I mean, for the South in that time.
Yeah, that's the thing that I think people miss.
You're only one generation from that happening, like nearly every day in the 1950s. So, you know.
And the only reason it really bit Jerry Lee is because he brought her to England with her, and people in England really didn't understand that. So,
we all marry our cousins down here.
Well, that, but I think the age difference too. That was just, that was kind of,
yeah, he was like what, 21 or 20? Like, yeah, I mean, later on in life, obviously that's not gonna be that big of a deal,
right? Yeah, but yeah, I don't know, the whole Priscilla angle is really strange too, because right after Elvis died, she ends up getting into Scientology. So there's a weird Scientology thread with the estate itself and Graceland as a place, because I don't trust Scientology at all. I've read into it a bit, and it's really sketchy.
Come on, you can trust Scientology.
Well, that's another throwback. Is, do you remember the Scientology commercials, the recruitment commercials from the 90s?
I remember the ones in the 80s for Dianetics.
Yeah,
I remember that.
Might have been the same ones. I think they might have just rerun them, but
yeah.
Yeah, I remember watching that as a kid and being like, what the hell? Like, what is Scientology, you know? But yeah, both her and Lisa Marie, because Lisa Marie was the one that had the legal right to the estate, but she was only 12 when Elvis died. So that was, it became like Vernon, his dad Vernon managed it. And that was kind of how that worked out. Until she reached a certain age, it was put into a trust. But you got to wonder about the Scientology angle of that, moving on past Elvis' stuff, because I think he had visited the Scientology church in L.A. and had a very strong repulsion of it. So yeah, it does seem kind of strange, especially if you take into account the UFO stuff. So
yeah, let's talk about the UFO. That's the segue. Let's talk about UFOs. Elvis and UFOs.
Yeah. So this book is, I found an ad for it in, I think, like an old Fate magazine a couple of years ago.
By the way, we have an extra guest here, which is that cricket, by the way.
Oh, you can hear that?
I can hear the cricket. it's all good, man.
I have a, I should just put on an Elvis record in the background or something.
Might get into some copyright issues on that.
Oh, that's true. I have a pet lizard in here, so I have crickets in it.
Oh, okay. Well, he's got to eat, right?
I think one got loose and it's in the room somewhere. That's a real drag. Maybe I can actually move to another room.
No, it's okay. Don't worry about it.
All right.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Yeah, so I had seen an ad for the Elvis UFO connection, I think, in an old Fate magazine or a Flying Saucer review, one of those, from the 80s. And this is one I had wanted for a couple of years. So doing this show, it gave me an excuse to go buy a copy for probably too much money. But the premise here is that the author, which is actually authors. So it's the Elvis UFO Connection, a non-fiction account of alien intervention, The Legend and the Mystery by Richard Daniel. Richard Daniel is actually two different people. They worked together and just kind of smashed their names together, and that's how they came up with the name. So it's...
It's not someone with two first names?
No, Richard, okay. Richard Bakalig and Daniel Gull. So... the two guys wrote the book, which gets really confusing because they're talking about specifically how he stumbled onto the mystery of Elvis and UFOs, which was watching a anniversary of his death, like a TV program that was like remembering Elvis. There was something about the belt buckle that Elvis was wearing in the one of the performances that that struck him, and he couldn't figure out why. So there's a picture in the book here. Basically, it looks like an infinity symbol on this belt buckle. But to this guy's mind, what it actually looked like was a pair of like gray alien eyes. And this is what sets him on the path with this, you know, and he ends up counting the number of gems around the edge of the belt buckle itself. And it adds up to 42, which, you know, that was the age Elvis was when he died. So that must be significant. Honestly, like, having wanted this book for so long, it's kind of funny that's what set him on the path, is just this belt buckle that he thought kind of looked like the eyes of a gray alien. But he was also talking about different symbols on the attire that Elvis would wear, and having seen the same symbols in books that he read about UFOs from like Jacques Vallée and Eric Van Doniken and stuff like that. So he developed this idea that it was, you know, the whole first chapter he's wrestling with it and thinking, well, it's probably nothing. And then he remembers reading a Elvis UFO encounter story in, I think it was in Elvis What Happened, that Sonny West recounts having seen a UFO with Elvis. So I know I sent you the brief video of that Sonny West telling the story, and this can be found on YouTube, but the basic element of it is it's like they see a star or maybe a plane or something, and it's getting bigger in the sky. And Elvis tells Sonny to go inside and get somebody else to come look at it. And he runs inside and comes back out, and Elvis is gone. And then they're shouting for him and looking for him, running up and down the street. And they find him way down the street. And Elvis defined it as a flying saucer, according to Sonny West's account. And said, like, don't worry, they're not here to harm us. They won't harm us. You know, like he knew what was going on with the aliens. So that's the only, honestly, that's the only thing in the whole book that directly connects Elvis to aliens. This is one story.
Just the fact that Elvis saw a UFO sighting, which isn't too unusual with other celebrities. I mean, John Lennon saw a UFO. I mean, David Bowie, I think, said that he did as well, you know.
The Moody Blues that's a really interesting one. The Moody Blues saw like a flying saucer landing on the way back from a show. So that's another one. Lemmy Kilmister from Motorhead, apparently, you know, the list goes on and on. Mitzi Collins and George Clinton, apparently.
Oh yeah. Well, every time Parliament Funkadelic played, there was the mothership. I mean,
yeah, but that's wild, man. Like, what if, you know, I kind of think that sometimes, you know, if I operate on the idea that the UFO phenomena is absurd enough, and it's absurd on purpose because, simply because it's too crazy to be believed, you know, what better way to hide than come up, have a witness that's completely unreliable, you know? Can you still hear me?
Oh, yeah, yeah, you're good.
Rip something. Sorry, that cricket was driving me nuts.
We got away from the cricket.
Yeah, I moved to another room. That's one. A lot of UFO sightings, and especially ones with, like, occupants of crafts, that ends up being so ridiculous that the story itself is super ridiculous, and maybe intentionally so, just so that people have a hard time telling the story. You know, people have a hard time even relating it to somebody, even if they can admit they saw a UFO. Then the high weirdness parts of it are the parts that often get left out with investigators, because it's hard to go that extra step of something really weird, you know? So I think, like, rock stars being picked as witnesses actually squares with that, right? Because if you say George Clinton saw a UFO, well, of course, you know, especially ones that are known for doing a lot of drugs, you know? The Jimi Hendrix UFO stories are pretty great too. I don't know if you're familiar with those, but
well, I mean, you can't believe everything you've ever heard about us flying saucers and space people,
right? You know, no, I mean, I'm not saying I necessarily.
That's from Axis Bold is Love, the first track on that.
Yeah. Oh, right. Yeah. But no, he claimed he was saved by the Space Brothers in a terrible snowstorm. He was waylaid on the side of the road, and apparently the Space Brothers landed and rescued him and his band at the time. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean, a lot of wild stories in rock and roll, you know. But yeah, no, the authors managed to make a whole book of this, and it ranges from just plain crazy to really kind of fun and makes you think. A lot of it is just kind of taking the oddities in Elvis's life, like a lot of which we already talked about, and comparing them against those of abductees. So you can tell the era it's coming out of is the 80s, because they're heavily relying on things like Bud Hopkins. I think David Jacobs gets mentioned in here. A lot of the Whitley Strieber gets mentioned a bunch. A lot of the kind of like abduction and the story recounted after a hypnosis, you know. So that's not my favorite flavor of UFO story, but I'm fluent in it. So they take a lot of the ideas of you know, during that era, a lot of talk would be about alien human hybrids, or the idea of generational abduction, where the aliens continually come back down the family line. So so the idea is that Elvis's mother Gladys was also an abductee prior to that. I think ultimately the idea is that Elvis himself was an alien human hybrid, or genetically altered by aliens.
Oh, so okay. All right. That's what we were just talking about before, the whole religious aspect, and like that's a little bit of the virgin birth kind of going on there.
Yeah.
If you want to equate it to that.
Yeah, and Immaculate Conception. This might be the
right.
This might be the funniest and weirdest part of the book, is that concerning Elvis's conception. Now I've never had my parents tell me about the night I was conceived, for which I am very grateful. I imagine your story is the same, right?
Yes, I've never asked that question.
I've never asked because I don't want to know.
Don't want to know, right?
My parents have never volunteered this information to me.
Yeah, what type of car's back seat was I conceived?
But Vernon Presley made it a point to tell Elvis at one point that he knows the very night he was conceived, because he blacked out during the lovemaking session.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. So the authors use this as, well, we've seen this in the abductee literature before. So they talk about cases where sex has been interrupted by aliens.
Ah, yeah, okay.
Somebody, like the male, has been moved up and down as though by marionette strings, and he doesn't appear to be conscious. So now I'm just like picturing.
Is this like from David Jacobs material or something?
Exactly. That's kind of what I'm getting at. These are the UFO literature, and I'm using finger quotes here, that they're relying on, is a lot like the David Jacobs, Bud Hopkins sort of stuff. To be fair, he does quote like Brad Steiger. I like that. I like Brad Steiger a lot, so that's cool. He uses a lot of Whitley Strieber type stuff, but yeah, it's that kind of idea where the aliens and the sex and everything is recalled through hypnosis later. So he basically builds a case study around the whole family, and the idea is that I guess what he's saying is the aliens were directly involved in Elvis's conception, but also in his birth. So the night Elvis and Jesse were born, of course, Jesse died pretty much right away, but Elvis was born, and Vernon went outside the family home in Tupelo for some air. And, you know, and there's a lot going on. It's a very emotional thing. And there was mysterious blue light over the Presley family home in the sky. So I think that's kind of a cool thing, if true. I'm not really sure what would cause blue lights above the clouds in the sky in the middle of the night, but that seems pretty compelling. And of course, blue or blue moon is a phrase that appears a lot in Elvis's songs. I think they failed to mention that in the book, which seems like a huge oversight to me, because if I were writing a crazy book about Elvis UFO connection, I got a list of them right here. Blue moon, of course. Blue moon of Kentucky.
Right.
Blue Christmas, Moody Blue, Blueberry Hill. When my blue moon turns to gold, Blue Suede Shoes is another one. And of course, GI Blues and Blue Hawaii. So,
man, hidden in plain sight.
I know. I don't know why I didn't go there. The authors both dropped the ball by not giving that list of song titles, but I don't know. That's a bit weird. Getting back to the generational alien abduction idea, you have Gladys had this weird paranoia that there were like people in the bushes outside her home before Elvis was born and after, when they lived in Tupelo, and then when they moved, she had this idea that there were men in the bushes outside and people trying to look in the windows. So the authors make this argument that that could be like a screen memory sort of thing. Or that, you know, she was being abducted too, and she was trying to protect him from the same fate. They use her like overprotectiveness. There's a whole lot of like the whole idea that Elvis was a mama's boy and she was really overprotective of him. Like, maybe that's why. So that's one of their clues in regard to that. And we also, you can stop me at any point and we could just riff on this stuff, because I'll just keep going.
Oh yeah, keep going. Yeah.
Not too much coffee.
This is great stuff. Honestly, it's all sound evidence. There's right. A bit of it.
Okay, well, he was visited by his brother at one point. They come up with that. So then that gets into the whole idea.
So was his brother the hybrid that was taken?
See, that's one possible angle to it. But then there's also the more esoteric angle, where you talk about aliens being analogous to fairies, being analogous to like the underworld of the dead and stuff like that. And I mean, this is stuff that Strieber gets into too, where it's like, or Witness of Another World, that documentary gets into it as well.
Right.
Where people see dead people during an alien abduction experience, you know? So the premise here is that they were using a twin brother that was growing up alongside Elvis that had already passed on, as kind of like the go-between them and the aliens, or they were just presenting that way. Like, when they showed up for their abductions, they were using that image of Elvis's lost brother as so. Yeah.
Okay. Did Elvis go through any like hypnotic regression? Was he into any kind of stuff like that? Because we kind of talked about how he was into other weird stuff.
Yeah, no, I mean, he was into reincarnation. So I would think if he got into, if he did hypnosis, he would probably do a past life regression. I think that would be the go-to.
Okay, right. Well, I mean, and he died also, I think, before, you know, I think Bud Hopkins was just getting started at that point. I mean, you had the Hills, but nobody was really doing the whole regression stuff like Hopkins.
Right. I think
until the early 80s.
Leo Sprinkle was around doing some of that too at that point. Yeah. Probably a little earlier, but I guess he would have died like right after the Travis Walton one. So, but yeah, you're right. It wasn't huge when I guess the idea is that there's a couple different scenarios where either Elvis knew what was going on, which seems to be implied by the fact that when he saw a flying saucer, he said, "They're not here to harm us," you know, or he didn't really know what was going on. And that seems to be what they're leaning toward, because the case study that they're building is that most abductees don't know what's happening in their life until they have the hypnotic regression to explain it to them. Mm-hmm. So maybe it was like all the seeking and the occult stuff that Elvis was getting into was trying to make sense of the weird stuff that was happening to him that he couldn't account for, you know? Yeah. And ultimately they're building this hypothesis that Elvis was, like I said, altered genetically. Here's a quote that comes from the Elvis and Gladys book that they use to bolster this idea. It says the cerebrations are caused by the organized vibrations of certain larynx's invisible, impalpable, incomprehensible little airwaves and mathematical combinations that the laws that governed them have existed forever, before Moses, before Pan, long before a larynx had been involved.
Did you get like a PDF version?
No, right? No, I put together, I actually prepared for this interview and notes in a,
yeah, but you got a physical book. That's what
I bought a physical reprint of the original for $70, and I'm ashamed to admit that, but
wow.
I really wanted the book.
Wow.
Johnny L. Tenney offered to send me one for free. He just had to find it, and I wasn't sure I'd get it in time. So
it was in a stack somewhere. It was right. Yeah, it was right next to the Jim Garrison files or something, you know.
Yeah, it was buried under something else, you know. Yeah, buried under some like D&D books or something like that. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So you know, missed opportunities, I guess. All right. So to get back to this quote here, it may be that the entire being of Elvis Presley, especially his voice, was the end product of a quote very definite design unquote. Initiated by the same force that has come to us from the heavens and has been with us for every phase of our evolution. The same force that has been associated with unusual or spiritual-like circumstances involving conceptions and births, past and present. So what they're implying here is that Elvis had a specially designed larynx and throat that was meant to perform the act of singing so incredibly well that it would influence all of humanity and on behalf of whatever the cosmic other is, the space aliens, that they had some message to impart to us that could only happen tonally through a specially crafted throat.
This seems rather nebulous. We want it to be space aliens, but we're open to being interdimensional Fae? I don't even know.
I like being open to it. I think the openness is good. They pretty much use the terminology aliens the whole time. But I mean, in this quote here, they're talking about like before Moses, before Pan. So they're bringing in like mythological and like,
yeah, interesting. They're bringing up Pan. I mean, is this a little to Rebirth of Pan or something?
It might be, actually, because this came out originally in 1986, so it might be directly referencing that. But I think they even make the argument in here that you could compare Elvis to Pan directly. But just like Giorgio Brewer says you can compare Elvis to Jesus, you know, and we already covered that a little bit, but yeah, so that seems to be the premise there. Other things that they use to, oh, and then the end of the book is just a list of all of the close encounter and abduction stories you've ever heard. So it's just recapping a bunch of stories for some reason, in case you hadn't already heard them, like Betty and
Okay,
Barney.
So that's the proof. Like, that's okay. So this happened. So,
well, they want to catch you up because they're assuming people are reading this book because they want to know about Elvis, but they're not sure you know the UFO background.
Yeah,
so they want to get you all these stories. Just
you might be an Elvis fan, but you might not know all of UFO contact mythology.
Right. Yeah. They want to try to meet you halfway with it.
Gotcha.
You know?
Gotcha. Yeah.
The other thing I thought was a little interesting was the Tin Man. They have a whole chapter in here called the Tin Man. I guess when Elvis was a kid in school, they would have a period that was like a free period at school where people would just mostly nap or like hang out. But if you weren't going to nap, you had to tell the class a story. And Elvis was the only one telling a story that continued day after day, one contiguous story that happened in as a series of episodes involving the Tin Man that would come to his house and play, you know, and hang out in his room and stuff like that. So they use the idea that the Wizard of Oz was popular enough at the time that he was talking about that Tin Man, but he could have been talking about like an alien robot or even a gray alien, because he looks like he's made out of tin, you know? So that's another point of evidence in here that I made a note about. Overall, pretty entertaining book. So I, for one, am totally convinced that Elvis was an alien or
alien human hybrid.
Yeah. Or was genetically altered by the alien.
Well, so essentially he is being turned into a demigod.
Yeah.
You know, I mean that's basically it, right? I mean, you've got this like this strange power that is from, you know, God knows where, and it's influencing the world, and that's basically a god.
Right.
And then, you know, so Elvis is not, he is not of a human father. He is of a otherworldly or extraterrestrial father, of a divine father. And so he's like Perseus or Hercules or any of these.
He's a demigod.
Yeah. He couldn't have been fully human. He had to.
Well, how else does a dirt poor farm boy from Tupelo become known to everybody in the world, you know?
Yeah.
Because I mean, they make the point, they tell this story where, like, you know, Western missionaries went to some remote village in Africa somewhere and went into a hut, and there was like a poster of Elvis up in there. It's like even in the remotest regions of the world, everybody knew who Elvis was. So they were using that to illustrate like his reach throughout the known world. And like I said, like 30 million Elvis fans can't be wrong. Mm-hmm. So, but they can be swayed by the alien agenda. They can be influenced. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't know what you make of all that. I don't know. I'm glad to be able to present this shocking information, because
it is indeed shocking information. What year was this book published?
1986.
Okay, so we're kind of at the cusp of Elvis is alive craziness.
Yeah, because Is Elvis Alive came out in 1988. So, yeah, and prior to that, I mean, I think you had speculation in some of the tabloids regarding that, but a few sightings here and there. I mean, I think the first Elvis sighting post his death was only a year or less after his death. Mm-hmm. And that's like the picture of him at Graceland, like somebody snapped a photo just of Graceland and he happened to be like standing in the doorway, you know? And I think, you know, that's been debunked a number of times, but the Mark Joseph photo from 1978, I think. So only a couple months after he died. But yeah, the real phenomena started in the late 80s there. And so this was before even that. So the Elvis UFO connection got a jump before that really took off. So, but then you have the other people who said that Elvis did not die, but he has contacted them from beyond the grave. So we have some of that stuff too. I can't talk as much at length about that, but I did read the aptly titled Elvis Speaks from the Beyond the Grave by Hans Holzer.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I know there's a Raymond Moody book out there too about Elvis in the afterlife. But yeah, there's been a number of people that have claimed to have contacted the spirit of Elvis.
Did they channel him? Was that what it was? Or?
Yeah, I think a few of them did. And but the one that Hans Holzer took most seriously was a woman who was just being repeatedly visited by Elvis. And what was funny about that was he referred to her as an Elvis contactee.
Not so he, nice. Nice.
So that, yeah, there again, we have the imaginal Elvis where, you know, he's before we had him in recreations, almost Bigfoot like, you know, or the Elvis UFO connection. And then now he's speaking to her from beyond the grave, but she's an Elvis contactee. Just great choice of words. But Holzer had been contacted by a number of people, I guess, that were just receiving afterlife messages from Presley, but he got this one woman that he took particularly seriously. And her stories are pretty wild. It was almost like she'd doze off on the couch and then like a portal would open up in her living room and Elvis would step out of it and like take her by the hand. And then they'd be like off in this other realm. And, now you might think she could have just been dreaming, but
what would they do?
Well, so
did they go to Blue Hawaii? Was it like the 68 comeback special? I mean, what was going?
They went to Elvis's dressing room in Vegas. They went there. They would mostly go to places where there would be a bunch of other dead people. So it was like the afterlife. Mm-hmm. So this woman saw her own grandmother there, along with Elvis for some reason. And her own grandmother interrupts the seance that they end up having. That there's a whole transcription of in the book. This book can be found on Kindle as like an ebook for like $3.99. I'm just throwing that out there. And it's worth it because it's wild. But yeah, he would bring her different places and he would explain like why he's reaching out to her. Because they were lovers in a past life together. And now he's moved on to a different version of life that once you live so many lifetimes and you learn everything you need to know, then you go up to the next level and you're on a higher level of reality, and which he refers to as being in school. So he's being in school to go up to the next level of the next level of consciousness, I guess, which actually isn't too different from a lot of like UFO cult religions beliefs on how that works. But before I get off topic, like I said, this is all pretty nebulous because I've just been absorbing this all for the past month and I'm honestly a bit worried about my sanity. So
Elvis is going to come to you in a portal tonight and he's going to,
I sure hope
like,
so.
Like AP Strange, let's go, baby. Take TCB, taking care of business.
Yeah, I sure hope so, man. That'd be great. Yeah, so I guess that's the premise there. Elvis's mother is in some of these, but he does take her to different places, and including his dressing room in Vegas, which had a secret elevator that would bring him down directly to the stage. So this was one of the things that Holzer was.
This is the real Vegas, or is this like it's the New Jerusalem or something? Like what?
Right. Holzer was able to confirm later that Elvis did have a secret dressing room in Vegas where he was performing, and it had a secret elevator that would bring him down to the stage level, bring him backstage. So his dressing room was on another level, and this secret passage to the stage that she went to in this kind of dream contact state with Elvis actually existed, but she shouldn't have been able to know about that because it was never publicized for obvious reasons. It's supposed to be a secret for security reasons, you know? And again, she's another one like Brewer Giorgio. She wasn't a huge Elvis fan. She liked him enough, but she didn't like read books about his life. And I guess Holzer was able to his satisfaction, prove this on some level that she wasn't such a big Elvis file, that she just knew all this stuff about him.
Mm-hmm.
So that was actually kind of a spooky part there. But she ended up going to him in New York. She had a husband at the time that she couldn't talk about any of the stuff with, and they had a seance with, I think, Elvis's cousin, and his stepmother was there. So Vernon Presley's second wife. And during the seance, Holzer is able to ask Elvis these questions directly, and she's kind of being the medium for it. You know, she's expressing what he's saying. So he was in the room for that. I liked one part of that where her grandmother shows up and interrupts the seance, and Holzer tells her to tell her grandmother to butt out. And she was like, "You don't tell my grandma to butt out." It's like, now she's mad. Now she's yelling at me. But I don't know. I mean, that's all. It's all some pretty weird stuff. I guess you can go from one extreme to Elvis is still alive, to Elvis is speaking to people from beyond the grave,
right, to
Elvis is on a flying saucer somewhere.
What about Elvis? I mean, the one we haven't covered. One we haven't covered. What about Elvis and Bigfoot?
Yeah, I mean, Elvis and Bigfoot could be living like a buddy, a buddy life out there somewhere, you know, like
with D.B.
Cooper.
It's like
a buddy comedy. Yeah, it's like a buddy comedy with, and D.B. Cooper keeps crashing on the couch, and they have to.
Yeah, right. The aliens show up.
Yeah. And Jimmy Hoffa's buried out back. Mm-hmm. And yeah. Yeah, I mean, I don't know, somebody needs to write the Elvis Bigfoot connection now, I guess. That's the next one.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's already been the UFO Bigfoot connection. There should be the Elvis Bigfoot connection. I think that's it. AP, I think that's it. That's your book.
Yep, all right.
That's it. That's your mission. Eat your heart out, Joshua Cutchin, because AP Strange is coming for you.
Yep, it's all Elvis. Everything's Elvis.
Well, I'll tell you my own personal theory.
Okay.
So, God, this was like 2008 or something like that, and I was in Memphis, and. This was back when my ex-wife was getting her citizenship. And so here in Tennessee, the area to do that is Memphis, the immigration place. And so we decided we'd go to Graceland because, you know, like, what the hell? We had never been. And we went ahead and we went and, you know, saw the jungle room. You know, it was very, very underwhelming.
That's too bad.
Yeah, it just I mean, it's just a house, really. I mean, the museum was kind of cool, I'll be honest. But the thing was that you could not go upstairs. They told you that, like, if you, like, the family still kind of lives there, kind of uses Graceland somewhat, and they said, like, out of respect for the family, you can't go upstairs. And I was under the impression, I don't know why, but I was always under the impression that you could tour the whole entire house, right? And so my theory is that he's still up there.
Well, yeah. And I mean, I think that's what a lot of people think too. Cause I mean, even as recently as a couple of years ago, you had a picture of just kind of a overweight man with a big white beard standing behind, like, I think like a pool house or something at Graceland. And somebody's like, it's Elvis. And it's like, I don't know, it's probably a caretaker, a guy like breaking the leaves or something, or just, you know, a tourist, somebody visiting. But yeah, I mean, I guess that's probably, imagine that, like, if he did fake his death but never left the building, he just, I mean, that's the phrase, Elvis has just left the building. But if he never left Graceland, that's just kind of crazy to me. But
well, there is a one, there was in one of those episodes, there was actually a picture that someone took at Graceland sometime in the early 80s, and they were it was actually a picture of a guy that looked like Elvis sitting in the doorway.
Right, that's the one I was talking. That was the one I was talking about a little earlier. I think it was like within a year or two of Elvis dying. Yeah, it was,
right.
The guy's name was Mark Joseph, something like that. But yeah, that was like the very first one. It's like through the door, you can just kind of see him right there.
Yeah.
I would be remiss if I didn't include, since I'm an ambassador for Liminal Earth, we do have one Elvis sighting on the map. So we should definitely cover that real quick because it's very brief. Have you read this one before?
No. So there's an Elvis sighting on Liminal Earth.
Yes,
that's great.
We were very excited to get it. September 8th, 1997, I think it's in Colorado. Might be, is it Denver? I think it's Denver, Colorado. It says, Elvis, I was walking around Boulder. Elvis, I was walking around Boulder very late one night with two dear friends in college. We were on LSD. We saw Elvis. He was huge, overweight, and old, sitting in a red lawn chair on a red porch that had a red light. There was a red cooler next to him on the porch. He saw us looking and waved. I think we waved back before traveling on. Submitted by Jasper H. So we at Liminal Earth were pretty happy to have an Elvis sighting on the map. Yeah.
So it being 2021, Elvis, I think, would be like 86 years old now, if he was indeed still alive, are not ascended to perfect masterhood.
Yeah.
That's the thing. It's like this kind of had its heyday in the late 80s, early 90s, and then it just kind of died down. So is there anything like even still going on with stuff?
It became a joke, right? Like, I mean, I think like after a while, it just became a joke. And I think it's kind of, it's kind of funny, like the influence he still has nowadays. I mean, there's a whole satellite XM radio station devoted to him, the Sirius radio station devoted to him. And in the last couple of days, I've basically just heard Elvis references. I mean, I might be picking him up more, but just on random podcasts, TV shows, I'm like, he's still so much in the fabric of everything. I don't know. I feel like every once or twice a year, you have somebody thinks they saw him, or they have some new reason to believe that he survived past 1977. I think it's becoming increasingly unlikely that he would still be alive under any scenario.
Right.
A lot of people like to just jump to the joke that he would be incredibly overweight and didn't lead a healthy lifestyle. But, you know, maybe if he did fake his death, he would be trying to clean up his act, you know, and live a simpler life. So who knows, maybe you'd live longer being an unknown, you know? Like I said at the beginning of all of this, everything old is new again. I mean, I never thought I'd see the alien autopsy videos coming back and being taken seriously, but that happened a year or two ago, you know? things seem to be cyclical. So who knows? Maybe we'll have one last hurrah with the Elvis is alive stuff, or, you know, Elvis will show up as a ghost or come off of a flying
maybe
saucer.
Maybe from this show,
yeah,
we'll start it all back up again.
Yeah, I mean, there is some kind of a magical element to it, to get out to the way weirdest stuff. My friend Sarah and I, she's the co-host of the Two Witches podcast, which is a pretty damn cool podcast. So I'll throw her a plug out there. But we had a bunch of weird Elvis related synchronicities leading up to this. I didn't realize how big a fan she was when she was growing up, but she's helped me with a lot of putting my facts together leading up to this. But yeah, I mean, that map from the 91 TV special where it tracks the supposed Elvis sightings around the map, I was like, you know what? That looks like a sigil. We should turn that into an Elvis summoning sigil, you know? So I talked to her about that, and it's up on our website now as so who knows? We'll make it happen. We'll make an Elvis manifest through magic or something.
Excellent. But, well, I think that's definitely a good place to stop. Is there anything else that you want to say about this that we might not have covered?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think I adequately explained the numerology stuff as well, but I don't know how capable I am of that, because I end up sounding like a crazy person when I do. But that kind of lines up with both the afterlife and UFO stuff. Basically in respect to the fact that this particular book, Cairo's Book of Numbers, spends a lot of time dealing specifically with Elvis's birthday, which is really strange because of all the days of the year, they spend a lot of time talking about January 8th, because it's like a particularly fateful number to be born under, you know? So I think the numerology I worked out based on this book, with his name, with his birth name versus the name on his gravestone, kind of indicates to me that he did that on purpose, just to change the vibration of the number that he had, to get away from the 8 that he was born under, and put him on a different path of destiny, and change the overall number from a 6 to a 7. So yeah, here we go. That sounded crazy. I can't explain the numerology, but I don't know. There are interesting things with the numbers in there, and it does kind of line up with the whole idea that he's in school in the afterlife to move to a higher level of consciousness, or that that's tied into the UFO angle. So I don't know. I guess the basic crux of it is that there's a hell of a lot of weirdness around Elvis, and it's out there if you want to go look for it. I tend to think, I would hope he survived 1977, and I would like to think that he managed to live a peaceful life and do what he wanted to do away from the public eye. That's kind of what I hope for him. So I don't know what it is that I believe anymore. I'm really questioning a lot of reality after all this research. So
yes, yeah. I think after tonight, you probably will need to back away.
Yeah, I've seen too much.
Anything else? I've seen too much. Looked into the mouth of madness. It's just gotten completely Lovecraftian at this point. And
yeah, pretty much. It's wormed its way in there. I hope people have fun listening to this anyway. So, yeah. All right. Well, I do appreciate you having me on. I hope this was fun for you to hear all the stuff, and I hope the listeners really enjoy all the Elvis weirdness here. So,
I definitely think so. Yeah. I think that they will. And, this has been very enlightening, AP. Where can people get in touch with you, find you, all that good stuff?
Find me on Twitter. That's where I'm most active. I'm at aprodigiosis on there because I like things to be nice and easy for people. But if you just search AP Strange, you should find me. or at APRO, I'll pop up. I have apstrange.com as the blog. I don't update it that often, but the most recent post on there is about the Bugs Bunny UFO connection. And you can find my other stuff on there about the Ashtar command, broadcast intrusion that I talked about last time I was on.
Right. That was last year. Yeah. Very interesting stuff. I mean, it's been very informative. Good gosh almighty, what an interesting show. Yeah. I was kind of thinking about like when we did you talk about the Ouija board, I was thinking like you take like the peanut butter or banana sandwich and put it in the middle, and that's like the planchette.
Oh, that's a great idea, actually, because we were thinking about doing it as an offering, but we have pets. So you have a small dog and you have a cat, it's tough to keep an offering out, but as a planchette it could work,
You should do that. You should totally do that. This has been very interesting. I'm going to close out the show here. Thank you guys for listening to this episode of Conspiranormal. It's been very interesting. Serfio will be back next week. We're going to have Steve Stockton on talking about the first book of his National Park Disappearances stories. Also, Patreon, www.patreon.com/conspiranormal. Come join us there. We got a lot of great stuff going back all the way to 2016. AP Strange here is actually a $10 member. He is a member of the Mystic Crew and has hung out with us at those hangouts that we do every month, which I think the next one will be coming up here in a few weeks. And also Strange Realities tickets, those are available from Eventbrite. The link will be here on the show notes. That is both online and in person in Nashville, Tennessee, October 15th, 16th through 17th. All right. Special thanks to you, Mr. Strange. And we'll see everybody next time on Conspiranormal.
Please consider becoming a Patreon at www.patreon.com/conspiranormal or leave a one-time donation at conspiranormal.com. And please check out our YouTube channel, Conspiranormal Podcast.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.